Hi there, folks. Jen Bunk here, and I'd like to announce that this is going to be the last interview-style podcast for a little bit. And after that, after this one, we are going to be taking a brief hiatus. So if you notice that we're not releasing anything in the coming weeks, that is why. We are going to hit the pause button just for a little bit. And then when we return from that hiatus, we're going to be launching a new format for the People Stack podcast. And let's call the new format Gen Talks. So instead of TED Talks, they're going to be Gen Talks, where I am going to be sharing insights worth spreading to the technical leadership community, to folks who are in technical management positions. I know that there are lots of you out there. And I'm going to be sharing these insights to help you to upgrade your careers, to help you command premium salaries of at least 200K a year without having to work your butt off 50 plus hours a week. So that's what you can look forward to in the weeks to come. And those will be, we plan on releasing those about twice a week with shorter segments, about 15 to 20 minute segments. So that's what's coming in the future here at the People Stack podcast. Until then, thank you so much for listening and enjoy my conversation with the hilarious, wonderful Randall Kutnick.
If we don't have feedback, we don't ever get better at what we're doing, we're just all going to fail. And I'd like it if we all didn't fail. Mm-hmm. And something I've noticed is if you kind of watch feedback disappear over time, you may notice that, hey, you know, everything's going great because no one's giving me negative or constructive feedback. And it's not because you're doing great. It's because, you know, 99 times out of 100, it's because no one trusts you enough to give you that constructive feedback.
Welcome to the People Stack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk. I am a career coach for tech managers and CEO of the People Stack. My guest for this episode is Randall Kutnick. He is a senior software engineer at Slack. Welcome, Randall.
Hello, hello. It's great to be on.
Oh, it is great. Hello, hello. It is great to have you on here, Randall. Really excited to chat today. So let's get started. Let's have you introduce yourself a little bit in terms of what you do at Slack. What is your role as a senior software engineer there?
That's a great question, and it's a hard one to answer just because there's so many things going on, which I find is more typical, more common these days. Especially, you know, the area I work in. And so to actually give a somewhat presentable answer to your question, I work in release engineering. So that's the internal tooling side of things. So if you have any complaints about the Slack app or the website or anything like that, don't tell me because I can't do anything about that. If the app is down, on the other hand, then that means, you know, something went wrong and we care about that. So really my team's job is to everything after the developer writes code on their laptop. And so they write code on the laptop, they get it tested, they run it through, so they run the tests, and then how do we get that into production safely and quickly in that order of priority? Because you can do things very fast by throwing out all of the safeguards and then all of your customers get mad at you. So we don't do that. More particularly, you know, release, you'd say release engineering, isn't that like a solved problem? And sort of, every company I've found is just so different in how they write software and their priorities that it's really hard to write a generalized tool for that. And so our challenge really in particular is to work with how, you know, the Slack stack and all of that. And not only that, but to build a tool that people want to use, because there's so many internal tools that just kind of get slapped together and no one really cared and everyone uses it because they have to. And no one wants to work at a company with a bunch of stuff that's a bunch of tools that are just mediocre. And so that's like one of our big priorities is to build tooling that not only gets the code to production, but like people enjoy using and like, wow, that's really nice. You know, I didn't feel confused or something when things went wrong, I didn't feel out of control. So that's a big priority for us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really appreciate that about Slack, the app, and about Slack, the company as well. I have come to know and love Slack over the last couple of years or so. It was a little bit of a transition for me, since I was just so used to email and just that whole thing, that switching over to Slack was a little bit, it was different, right? And anything different can like throw you for a loop. But because I had people around me who use it regularly and show me, and okay, this is how you use it, and it's actually quite straightforward. It's almost that it's like, it's so easy to use that you're not expecting it to just work. And that's just one of the things I love about Slack.
Yeah, and it's a lot of work to get something to make it seem like it's so easy to use. And it's awesome to hear that hey, it's working, that people enjoy our product. It's nice working there. I've been there for about a year now and have never received an email from a human. I've gotten automated email, sure, but it's so nice.
Got it. Yeah.
Email is dead at Slack, and I'm so glad for that.
Yes. I am almost getting to that point as well, where I'm like dreading email more and more, because Slack is just so, it's just so seamless to use, and it's just so much easier to have conversations and like threaded conversations and things that way. It's just all right in front of you. But we can get into a whole conversation about email, but I don't think we have to, because Slack is awesome. That's really what it comes down to. But one of the things that I wanted to ask about, Randall, just in terms of what it is that you do, is when you look at your LinkedIn profile, your job title, what you listed, is you are the server necromancer at Slack. And I figured there would be somewhat of a story around why you chose that particular title. So how does that fit into the release engineering piece of it?
So it started at my last job at Netflix, where Netflix has got a flat engineering structure. So like, we still have managers, but everyone is a senior software engineer, and that's their title. And we don't care. There's not promotions or anything like that. And so when my boss said, yeah, so the title is senior software engineer, but you can really use whatever you want. And I went, whatever. and I started just playing around and just coming up with goofy things. I think there was a time when I was doing some tests in the test environment, and then the test environment talked to the same database as the production environment for this particular tool. And I took out everything, because I put bad data in the database, which then blew up production. And so that's why for my Netflix title is Unintentional Chaos Engineer, because I managed to break everything. And I was doing what I was supposed to, but I still uncovered a flaw in the system. And so I've had a couple other ones. Full Snack Engineer is another favorite. The current one comes from the discussion, talking in resilience and in engineering, which is something that's very important to us as release engineering, how to make sure bad changes don't get out and fixes to problems in production get out as fast as possible without, again, tearing down all the safeguards. Or maybe how do we let people tear down the safeguards with an I know what I'm doing button, or things like that. But when things go wrong and we have an incident, afterwards we talk about it. And some people call that a postmortem, and some people call that a learning exercise. And I always said I prefer postmortem, because that means the servers died and we brought them back to life. So that means we're all necromancers. And that's where the current title came from.
Got it. I love how you're so, it's clear that you're so playful with work. And it sounds like that's kind of part of the culture at Slack well. And so it sounds
computers are awful.
Good for you. Yeah. What's that again?
It's like computers are awful. And working with them is just sometimes so frustrating. And it's good to have a sense of humor and levity about things, because sometimes things will go wrong, and that's no one's fault. It's just how we work.
It is how it works. And so we might as well at least have fun with it and make fun of it. Because what else, what else is there to do? Are we going to complain about it? Like, that's no fun. Right. And that actually leads to one of the things that I was going to ask about, Randall, is I happen to know that you are a seriously funny person. And I'm not just saying that, you know, to be nice. I have actual evidence for that. So I've read some of your tweets, and one of the ones is why programmers like cooking. You peel the carrot, you chop the carrot, you put the carrot in the stew. You don't suddenly find out that your peeler is several versions behind and they drop support for carrots in 4.3. So I am not a programmer. My husband was at one point. So I know enough about that world, but I just started cracking up like, oh my God, yeah, cooking is really easy. And even like a lot of people complain, oh my God, cooking is so hard. I can't follow this recipe. But like, at least, you know, you don't get an error message saying, sorry, we don't support that anymore. Like, that's just real life. Mm-hmm. So I love that kind of stuff. And so what I'm wondering is, how do you approach kind of balancing work with play? Do you kind of like to integrate the two and say, okay, this is just kind of all one life? Or do you kind of separate the two? What's your approach to that?
That's a big question. When it comes to, you know, just joking around, like I said, it's important to me to maintain a kind of sense of levity around what we do, because it's very easy to kind of just slip into things and just become just too serious. It's there's so many things going on. It's easy to just kind of forget that we're, you know, what we're doing, and just get obsessed with all of the errors and the bugs and then the million tickets you have, and just get ridiculously stressed. And that's a great recipe for burnout. And I think one of the things I try to live by is there's a really old comic strip called Pogo. And one of the characters tells another and says, don't take life seriously. Don't take life so seriously, son. It ain't no how permanent. Mm-hmm. And that's something I think about, you know. It's like, all right, you know, this ticket, this bug, if it's not like an incident or emergency, you know, it will exist tomorrow. If I'm trying to fix it and I'm running into all sorts of problems and it's really frustrating, it's okay if I put it away at 5 p.m., go do something else and tackle it again the next morning. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's important to me. If you had told my younger self just how much I'd enjoy household chores now, I would not have believed you. But it's the same attitude of being able to find things that, one of the problems with computers is like the tweet says, is something completely out of your control can go horribly wrong and you really just kind of feel powerless because there's 5 million lines of code and somewhere in there something's wrong and you don't even know what. You get an error message if you're lucky. Mm-hmm. And with just doing chores, it's like, okay, I go sweep the room and I get to do something with my hands. I'm active. It's nice to see the visible perception of, you know, the work I've done. The floor is now clean.
Yeah.
And it's nice. I was I wrote a book on RxJS. I was talking to my editor about, you know, I've worked in this field for ages and this is the first physical, tangible object I've ever produced. It's the first time I've ever been able to like put my hands on the work I do.
Yeah.
And there's something about us humans that is just, you just like seeing something really happening with your progress.
Yeah, so, I can absolutely relate to that there's so much that can go wrong when we're using computers or technology or anything, you know, whether it's just our phones or our laptops or whatever they might be, our iPads or whatever, you know. But like when it's the simpler stuff that doesn't have, you know, a million chips and things that can go wrong and a million bits and bytes, that there's like an elegance in the simplicity of it. Like I've found that I love like tracing and drawing and coloring, which is like, you know, going back to, you know, like our kid days, like just the simple pieces of just enjoying that, not only that, like this crayon is just, you know, it's going to work. There's no question about it. And that there's a physical thing that comes out of it at the end that I can touch and decide to put on my fridge if I want to. Yeah. So there really is a simplicity to that, especially since there's so much complexity, overly complex stuff that happens in the world. And you had also mentioned that being too serious is a great, and being obsessed is a great recipe for burnout. And I That's a wonderful distinction, because I think we can talk about, oh yeah, well, it's fun to be fun and keep it lighthearted and everything. But like the other side of it is if you take things too seriously, there are some serious consequences of that. I think people sometimes don't really look at that side of it. So I think that's a really important point.
Yeah, and you can go too far and everything's a joke and you don't take anything seriously. Sure. But honestly, in terms of the spectrum, I think we go far too serious.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that, especially, you know, in the tech world. And look, I get it. Like, if, when that's your life and that's your career and that's your world on a day-to-day basis, it's like, okay, you want it to go well. You want to build great things. I mean, you want to please customers and your boss and your team and all of that. But at the end of the day, keeping that perspective. That's what I heard in what you said as well. Like keeping that perspective of how big is this problem really?
Yeah.
It's really such a small thing.
Earlier in my career, I worked at a startup that really was pushing everyone. It's like, all right, we're almost there. Every week, every couple of weeks, there was some new excuse to get everyone to work 60, 80 hours a week. And it really became clear that they weren't doing that because of whatever reason they had that particular sprint, but it was just, we're a startup and we need to work a lot of hours. And really just, I've made some really good friends there, but all of us afterward are like, there's no reason we needed to work that hard. It was just working to work. The startup ran out of money and shut down. And so all of those hours we'd put in just kind of vanished and it didn't matter. No matter, like, all the work we'd done was just gone. And that was a really, you know, enlightening moment for me. And since then I've had people say, oh, we need to work more. And I go, why? You know, like, what are we trying to accomplish? Sometimes there's an emergency. You need to get all hands on deck. Sure. Otherwise the space kraken's going to attack you and try and crack the ship in half. But most of the time that's not true. And even when you do have that emergency, you need to take some time afterward and relax. I just like, all right, so we've been working, you know, really hard the last 2 weeks, and just give the team a day or two off afterward because you need it. Otherwise it's going to just all build up and collapse.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some really, really important messages that you just included in what you were talking about, Randall, and I cannot underline it enough. And I encourage everyone who's listening to this to go back and rewind a minute or so and listen to it again, because I think in what you just said, we can all take a look at our own lives and say, what am I doing that maybe I'm just doing it because that's how it's always been done, you know, okay, working 80 hour weeks because I work at a startup, right? Or whatever it might be. When are you working just to work, or are you working toward a purpose, toward some outcome? Because we can get stuck in hamster wheel, going round and round and round and not even realize we're in there. So such wonderful points there. So where I'd like to go now is talk about teams and trust and developing trust, especially with new team members. And this is something that I know you've said you've been working on, and you've tried out some tactics and strategies to develop trust with team members. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on what you've tried, what's worked, and what hasn't in terms of developing trust in team.
Sure. I mean, I feel like it's like just obvious, like trust is important. Great. You know, check that off. You can shut the podcast down. Like, we've established it. Trust is important.
Yeah.
And everyone will say that. And everyone will say, yeah, we want to encourage trust in our team. This is one of those things where you need to take that step back. Like, are we working to work? And say, are we actually encouraging trust? Or are we just saying that because everyone says that? And I found that, you know, I've worked for managers that really said a lot of things and they said, and the team noticed that and picked up on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've worked for managers that, you know, and leaders that really deeply believed in that. And one of the interesting things is the managers in the latter category didn't really talk about, yeah, we believe in trust. They just lived it and everyone knew it. And that really, you know, influence me. And when I'm in a leadership position like that, it's like, I don't, standing up there and talking about things that are important isn't what matters. What matters is how I act and what I do, because that's what people will pick up on. If I act and try to build and act like trust is important to me, then I don't need to tell everyone trust is important because they know it from the way I act.
Mm-hmm.
So, in particular, when you're a new leader, I sort of inherited a team at one of the startups, and it was kind of this mismatch of everyone who didn't quite fit in elsewhere. And so how do you build a team identity out of that, out of like the people who didn't get, kind of got pulled from other teams because they weren't quite fitting in. And I think that it's important to, you know, to build trust there is just, you know, what I tried to focus on there was how can I best serve you and make you better? And just really leading in that way in an actionable way, not just sitting down in a one-on-one saying, how can I make you better? And then completely dismissing it, because that would have undermined everything I'm trying to do. Yeah. And I got a lot of responses that were unexpected, just out of band. One of which was, you know, from a relatively new employee, and not just new to the company, but new to the industry as well. And he says, well, I don't know how to do Git branching. And okay. He had yet to contribute to this company. He'd been there for 3 months because no one had sat down and like, here's how we do Git. No one teaches Git in college. I hope that's changed. No one had taught him how we contribute at this company. And it was just like, oh God, like, here you go. Like, let me just take that 30 minutes and show you what's going on. And it wasn't like, the generic things that you see in every management book. It was a lot of much more detailed things like that.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's really interesting.
And repeating again and again, trying, it's like, how do I pave a road for you?
Mm-hmm. And so some of the responses, it sounds like, fell along the lines of, I don't want to ask this in public, but can you show me, you know, how to do this? Or, you know, can you explain what this means, like along those lines? You know, can you just catch me up on, you know, some of the basics that, you know, oops, you know, I missed, or for whatever reason, I never learned. Mm-hmm. Were there other kinds of responses that surprised you as well?
Yeah. Another engineer there who'd been, you know, working a lot, longer and had a lot more experience, really wanted to kind of step into not a people leadership role, but wanted to have more autonomy in building. We're building the data streaming, more internal tooling, more autonomy in that, and really wanted to take charge on the back end. And it wasn't really an area that he had worked in before.
Mm-hmm.
And so, So it was like, you know, it could have been easy, like, all right, well, you know, you haven't worked in this before, so we need you to prove the X, Y, and Z, and here's the 7 different policies in Google Docs and things like that. And I said, you know what, what's the harm in just saying, all right, here's a fairly substantial backend task, and a week, you know, worst case scenario, he tries it, he doesn't like it, he fails, whatever, and we lose a week, just one week of work. And he completely knocked it out of the park. I was stunned by I was like, wait, because he got it done and then he added a whole bunch of extra on it. And I'm like, I was just amazed. And it was one of those things where it was a risk on my part, certainly, you know, some of my political capital of saying, all right, this guy can do this thing without, you know, triple stamped approval. And he did. It was really, you know, just incredible to see him kind of take off like that. And he just kept, I'm like, all right, just keep going. Don't let me stop you. Because sometimes the best thing I can do is just get out of the way and let people keep going.
Yeah, that's an amazing, that's an awesome lesson in leadership there. Because I think so many times people get stuck, and I've certainly done this. You kind of get stuck in micromanaging and, okay, I'm going to show you how to do this. I'm going to show you how to do this. I'm going to show you step one. Okay, do step one, then report back. Okay, now I'll show you how to do step two. Yeah, we got to take this one step at a time. versus just going in the opposite direction and say, okay, here's the outcome. Here's the desired end result. Go. Have fun. Mm-hmm. And people will absolutely amaze you when you do that kind of thing and just kind of let go and, yeah. get out of their way. Sometimes that's part of what leading means, is actually, okay, I'm going to set the goal and I'm going to inspire you. I'm going to be there for you. But you know what? No, I'm just going to get out of your way because you're going to shine. That's awesome.
Such an awesome feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And what I'm also curious about too, Randall, under the topic of trust, just your thoughts on this. One of the things that I have found comes up a lot when, you know, for example, when I talk with clients or even just talking with newer managers, like friends who are newer managers, like doing one-on-ones, for example, and like suggesting to them, you know, just ask them the question, you know, how do I best serve you? How can I make you better? And I think, you know, for a lot of people, there's this fear of, well, what if they ask me something that I don't know the answer to? Right? There's this sense of, I'm the leader. Shouldn't I know all of the answers? So I'm curious from your perspective, how you approach that kind of thing. Like if somebody from your team were to ask you something or to do something or whatever it might be, where you don't know the answer to it, how do you approach that?
Yeah, I think that this is a good place for humor and levity. I mean, I definitely go into situations, you know, I've joined far too many startups where I had no idea what I was doing. And my job was just kind of like dive in and figure out how to swim. And my attitude's always been, you know, the important thing is, you know, being honest. If you try to like put up a wall of, I know everything, people are really good at figuring out that you're lying to them. And that's a strong word. And I think it's important in this situation to say, if you're pretending like you know everything, you are lying to your team, then you're starting to break down that trust. And I used to teach at a programming boot camp. So it's like going from nothing to a programming job in 3 months. And I said for people, it's like the most important thing you can say in an interview is, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because showing the character of, we have now reached the part where I don't understand, but I say, I don't know, but then say, here's how I would figure it out. Like, I would probably Google this, or there's probably a Stack Overflow question for this, or something like that, to just be honest and say, I don't know. I can try and figure that out for you. And then, of course, it's the important part. You need to actually try and figure that out for them. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of discussion in whether or not you should take notes in one-on-ones. And I'm definitely of the opinion, because I am one of these people, if you need to take notes to remember what you told them you'd do, take notes.
Yeah,
absolutely. I when I have one-on-ones, I said, just start off that way. I say, here, I need to take notes, because otherwise I'm going to forget something. And being, again, I'm being honest, I'm not great at remembering things. I need this notebook to help me remember things. Sure. And people really, that resonates well. People are just like, okay, yeah, you know, I sometimes forget things too, or post-its or something like that. And mm-hmm. it's really great to help build that. And you know, sorry.
Yeah. And what I'm, absolutely. You know, so being honest, bringing some humor and levity to it, but yeah, the most important one, a correct answer to a question that you don't know is, I don't know, but let's figure it out. That's definitely a key distinction. What I'm curious about, you said there's been some discussion around taking notes during one-on-ones. I'm not completely familiar with the discussion. And honestly, I'm like, I take notes too, right? Like I'm, mm-hmm. like, cause I know that I'm not going to remember everything and I want to write down what I'm learning. And especially I'm going to write down what my next actions are. And maybe even, you know, the person that I'm talking to, like I'll write down their next actions too. So I can hold them accountable for that. So I'm curious, what's the other side of the argument? What would be a reason to not, so that, to not take notes during one of them?
I mean, when I'm taking notes, first off, I'm taking them on a physical medium. There are some people who take notes on a laptop, and that's a bit too far for me. I think it's just too distracting. In a one-on-one, you know, we should be focused on each other. That's the entire purpose of the meeting, is for, you know, two people to sit down and really catch up, whatever that means. And if you have a laptop in front of you, it kind of kills the vibe.
Totally.
So even though I do appreciate, you know, the cloud sync, and I am not a, I'm a person who's prone to forgetting about things, so I have forgotten notebooks. But the it's more important to me to have just like writing things down physically, which is less distracting. There are some people who think you really shouldn't be taking any notes. The entire time your focus should be on that person. And you can do that, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I can't. And that's just me knowing my own strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. And yeah, I do the written notes thing. I'm old school with that as well. Like if there's a laptop in front of me, okay, hang on. Tap, tap, tap. Okay. What did you just say? Tap. Like, no, that's not what that's
here. Yeah. And sometimes I'll have to Slack someone and say, I've got this note here. I have no idea what I wrote down because my handwriting is that bad.
Guilty as charged. Or I'll send people my notes. Like, and I'm not sure exactly what this says, but it says, yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. So there's lots of great ideas here that you've shared, Randall, in terms of trust, developing trust from the simple question of how do I best serve you? How can I help make you a better person? Using being honest, saying I don't know what you, when you don't know, but making sure that you're helping them find the answer, to getting into some of the tactics of note-taking and holding ourselves accountable for things. Mm-hmm. Was there anything else that comes to mind when you think about tactics and strategies that you've tried in developing trust among team members?
Yeah, actually we've talked about the easy part so far because there's so many, I have so many opinions here. You know, trust is an important thing, yep. But so far it's, you do need to ask, you do need to talk to people and get their feedback on things, but then you need to actually do that. And humans are humans, so it's okay to screw up, and it's okay to say, hey, I screwed up. I never actually did the thing I said I'd do last week. But you only get so many oops tokens before, you know, you're the people you're talking to start to lose that trust. And it's like you start thinking, well, maybe if I ask my manager for this, they're just not paying attention. You know, they don't actually have any interest in what I'm saying. And this is particularly important for when someone initially joins a team. Either you're now the new manager, or you have a new hire or transfer, something like that. Mm-hmm. And there's one thing I've seen more people talking about, and I really want to see many, many more people talking about, which is, really, there are a lot of bad managers out there and a lot of employees who've reported to bad managers and kind of carry the scars of those relationships. And the absolute best managers I've had, the people I kind of try to aspire to manage, like, really have an individual attitude of trying to find out, all right, what are the bad managers you've had in the past? What behaviors, even normal behaviors, do I need to avoid because they may be triggering, or you may just, you know, go like, oh, okay, you don't actually mean that.
Yeah.
And so that's the first thing that, you know, I like to do is just let's have a discussion, and it's not a serious discussion about the business and all that. It's like, no, I want to get to know you. Tell me about your last job. Why did you choose it? What are some good managers you've had? What are some bad managers you've had? Getting to know someone and being able to know, oh, okay, this is important for them. It's really important for the titles are really important to this person because of the last company they got passed over for a promotion 9 times, and they really want to be building up their career. Or maybe, you know, just a verbal recognition, just saying in a meeting, hey, you know, Stacy did a really good job on the FUBAR project or whatever, and finding out what's important and behaviors to avoid.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've noticed, the kind of path you really want to avoid, it's really easy to fall into this, is with feedback. Because if we don't have feedback, we don't ever get better at what we're doing. We're just all going to fail. And I'd like it if we all didn't fail. Mm-hmm. And something I've noticed, because my own times I've screwed up, or times I've reported to people who get this wrong, and is you kind of watch feedback disappear over time. you may notice that, hey, you know, everything's going great because no one's giving me negative or constructive feedback. And it's not because you're doing great. It's because, you know, 99 times out of 100, it's because no one trusts you enough to give you that constructive feedback.
Yeah.
So, and it's, I've seen this, the it falls apart in really kind of two different ways, I've found. Mm-hmm. The first being, we unintentionally kind of give people, push back against people giving constructive feedback. Mm-hmm. Really, if, you know, of all the things I'm going to say, this is the most important thing for me is, there's this awful anti-pattern that none of us really think about where, if someone says to us, hey, this thing is making me feel uncomfortable. I don't like this policy. I have a problem with this or that. Our first instinct is to re-explain the reason behind that policy or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
which is so obvious. It's like, of course, well, they don't know about this. Let me explain it again, which, you know, assumes they don't know what they're talking about, which is not a great place to, and it immediately invalidates their emotions. Like, oh yeah, you just completely skip over that. You don't recognize that, you know, that it's a problem or that they see it as a problem or something like that.
Yeah.
So in terms of building up that trust, rather than immediately pushing back, to take a second, reflectively listen, make sure that they feel like they're being heard before you even begin talking about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, because there's a lot of different ways giving constructive feedback you can get pushback. It's not just, oh, well, you know, you don't like my tie, so you're fired. It's, you know, often can take a point of like feeling invalidated. You can get a point of, you know, people in highly political organizations say, oh, well, you criticized XYZ, so you're not a team player. And that can have follow-on effects. And so a lot of people go, oh, okay, well, I better not criticize anything because then, you know, people will use that against me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's so important to when you have someone new and that relationship is just beginning, it's very fragile and very easy to, you don't have that many oops tokens to use up on something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So many key points there. And the one that I circled as by the way, I'm taking notes, awesome. Taking handwritten notes. This is all great stuff. It is the acknowledgement. Instead of just going right into, oh, I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you solve this thing. Oh, you don't like the policy. Well, I'm just going to explain it. Instead of first acknowledging that, okay, I hear you that you don't like that you don't like the policy. That's actually, it's coaching 101, right? So that's definitely one of the things that I've learned, being in a coaching role officially for 5 years now, but, you know, longer than that when I was, you know, mentoring students as a college professor. Mm-hmm. Just simply acknowledging people and not just going right into, I know the answer, because that's what we want to do, right?
Yeah.
Because we want to solve the problem, and that's cool, right? You know, it's like, I get it. You're a problem solver. You want to solve it. But hang on, hold your horses, right? Like, just even just acknowledging, I hear you, and then just repeating what it is that they said, then that can help you just sort of like get into a space where it's, all right, we're gonna figure this out. And get to a place where together we can either help you understand if that's what it is, or whatever it is that the desired outcome of the conversation is. And then you're going to get less pushback because mm-hmm. you're there to help, and not there to, like, you know, tell them they're wrong or something like that. Cause nobody likes to be told that they're wrong. That's just not a good place to be. So yeah, that's a central piece around the feedback of it, the feedback piece. And I love how you're kind of diving deeper into the usual discussions around feedback. I mean, feedback is important, but we're really kind of getting into the details here. And one of the other things that I really loved what you said, Randall, was about what are your behavioral triggers and sharing those with people. I really wish people would do that more too and ask about it, because we all have them, right? We all have those battle scars, those scars that you said. And just to be aware of those kinds of things, you know, talking about being humorous and, you know, talking about things from a place of levity and fun. But okay, where's the line? I just wanna know, is there a line that I can't, that you don't want me to cross, or did I cross it? Okay, I'm very sorry. And then kind of going from there and really sharing those behavioral triggers. So is there, are these things that you do like with your team members, like in the beginning and throughout, to kind of talk about what those might be and letting, like letting each other know, for example, when lines are crossed?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that even in the beginning, kind of setting that standard of, again, I don't say, you know, knowing all of your boundaries is important to me. I show it by talking about a history and what are good bosses you've had, what are bad bosses you had, and even sharing some of my own and how to work well together. I know myself, I prefer more direct feedback. I don't like people beating around the bush or trying to subtly say things and hoping I'll pick up on it. No, just tell me. I'm not going to be offended or upset. It's much easier for me to be like, all right, you need to stop doing this. Okay, good. Now I can stop doing that.
Thank you.
And that's just me. Some people do prefer something that's more, you know, not as blunt.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. How would you like your feedback? Would you like it blunt or would you like it in a sandwich?
Right.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I love that. I love that.
Hi, everyone. We'll get back to the interview in a jiffy. But first, are you a tech manager? In other words, do you lead teams of geeks through long-term complex projects? Do you feel like you're wasting precious time going to useless meetings, dealing with administrative nonsense, and working late nights? Are you working 50 plus hours a week, but don't have the salary to show for it? It doesn't need to be that way. You can build thriving, high-performing teams who produce a measurable positive impact while earning the premium salary you deserve. Oh. And you don't have to work your butt off to get there. If this sounds like the kind of success you're striving for, then go to jenbunk.com/webinar to reserve a spot in my free masterclass. I share the 4 shifts that my tech manager clients made to achieve badass career transformation. That's jenbunk.com/webinar. Without further ado, please enjoy the rest of the interview.
Well, there's so much more that we can kind of tap into here, but we've covered so much. And given that I am mindful of the time, and I have one more question for you, Randall, that's where I'm going to go to. And this is the question that I ask all of the podcast guests, and that is, what is the biggest people-related challenge in your job?
Oh, yeah. At Slack, in particular, and I know everyone says this, but is really just kind of scaling, and going from. I mean, Slack is only 5 years old,
okay.
And it feels like everyone's using it. It just, you know, appeared out of nowhere, and it really, as you know, Slack was initially released a little over 5 years ago, and we're still growing and dealing with this, you know. Going from, you know, this neat idea to a public company, in that time, and it's hard to figure out the right thing to do. You know, do we spin this off into a new team? Do we try and keep this in? Do we, you know, how do we architect things? And it's, it's tricky, and it's not something that you can ever get. Actually, like 100% right. It's not like a test, unit test, where it's like, oh, good, all the tests are green, we must be good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something where you only learn the best answer well after the decision's been made, and now you've got an entirely different decision ahead of you. But that's part of the challenge in keeping things interesting.
What would you say is the biggest challenge with scaling from a people management perspective? Just because is it like that so many people are getting hired and the team is getting so much bigger? And so you have, you know, kind of that aspect of it, or maybe it's something else.
The biggest, part of that, it just seems like everything is going on at once, which, I mean, hey, it's a public company. We're still a startup though, in a lot of ways. And so, I think figuring out repeatable processes, because when you're a tiny company, just one-off things, they work. You know, it's like, hey, let's do this. Okay, cool. We'll do this. And then the company doubles in size and you go, oh, that's not quite working, but there's a bunch of other things on fire right now. And then the company doubles in size again. And it's like, how do we go from just kind of everyone knows each other, so it's pretty easy, to the natural corporation and building, you know, repeatable processes, which admittedly building a repeatable process is easy. Building one that works for everyone is a lot harder.
And so, yes, I can relate to that on a number of levels. Right, because it's easier when the team is smaller, because you're it's just maybe four or five or even 10 mm-hmm. of you, and you figure it out, and you don't necessarily have to have scalable processes in place. You just do what works. Hey, let's do it. Oh, cool. You know,
yeah. I mean, when I was working at a startup of four people, like, hey, I'm going to be out Friday.
Yeah.
Cool. And then that's it. It's like, no one, and we're tracking vacation. We're trying to survive right now.
It's like, well, right. Yeah. Well, and I was going to say, well, what's your process for letting people know what your hours are? I just tell them.
Yeah.
What process? What do you mean I'm getting a process for this? Right. Versus once you start having teams and teams of teams and managers and managers of managers, then mm-hmm. it becomes all of the little things that maybe you were avoiding when you were smaller just become bigger, and they're like under a microscope. And so when you say people processes, what comes to mind? Like, what's an example of a people process?
I guess so one of the important things is promotions. How do you recognize sustained great effort on someone's part, and how do you do so in a way that's fair, so you don't have people — that's another great way to break trust, is to just say, oh, you know, well, Steve over there got promoted just because, you know, he's been here for so long, he hasn't actually done anything lately or whatever. And so how do you decide who gets promoted? How do you communicate that? And that's tricky. This is not Slack. This is from another large company you have heard of, where I was at a conference. A friend of mine is telling me this story about how someone got passed over for promotion a couple of cycles, and they got fed up and frustrated with it. And so they stopped doing all their maintenance tasks. So all of the times they just run a script and everything would be fine, they just stopped doing that. And then things started spiraling out of control, and there would be a big incident, and they'd step in, run the same script they've always been running, except this time they waited until it was an incident. And then they'd be the hero of the incident. They solved it. They saved the day. And uh-huh. repeat several times. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, obviously we need to promote this person because they've really been knuckling down and saving everyone's bacon. Uh-huh. And word got out, and it's now actually considered like a regular thing that ICs do, is to just, if you're looking to get promoted, just stop doing any maintenance work, which is a terrible idea. And this company is much, much larger than Slack. And so in order to actually change any of the processes is this huge operation. And so no one's bothered. And so now this is just this regular part. And for obvious reasons, Slack doesn't want to be that way. We don't want to have where you have to like set the building on fire and then put it out to be recognized for that. It's important to be able to recognize, especially in release engineering. A lot of the incidents just never happen. And being able to say it's really good preventative maintenance work and recognizing that as well.
Right. Yeah. The ones that keep the trains running. You know, it may not be as recognizable than something else that big that broke, and then, you know, and it becomes a bigger deal and is communicated throughout the company. But like, and for sure, you know, those kinds of things deserve recognition as well. But like, it's the little things as well. It's all in the details of everyone making it work that absolutely deserves recognition as well. And I'm so glad that you brought this up, because like, as a career coach for technical managers, like, this is one of the things that brings people to us so many times, time and time again, is lack of recognition. Mm-hmm. And so while, you know, one of the things that we show our clients, you know, for example, is, you know, taking ownership of your own career and, you know, making sure that you are voicing the wins that you're winning and the wins that your team is winning. You know, that's on you. But to sort of bring the conversation from your end of it is to say, yes, we want to see people self-promote, absolutely, but that the organizations have a responsibility as well to make sure that the people who are doing well are recognized for it. And how can we kind of meet in the middle to make sure that even the people who are keeping the trains running, mm-hmm. that they get recognized as well, because they absolutely deserve it. So yeah, I love that. So is that something that you guys are working on now with Slack? I mean, you don't have to tell me any super secrets, but so is that why that came to mind, or?
That's been something that's been worked on a lot recently. And so without going into any too many details, yes, it's something that's important. This is, you only get promoted a limited number of times in your career. And so we should be recognizing excellence and hopefully not recognizing other things that aren't nearly as important. Do you know the VP's son or whatever, just to make up random examples.
Mm-hmm. Say once more, do you know what?
Oh, sorry. Just like, does your kid play on the same, you know, basketball team as the vice president's kid or whatever like that?
Oh, okay. Right. And then it's because of that inside baseball that's the reason that somebody might get recognized because they're that. Or like the people who just happen to be the louder voices, mm-hmm. the extroverts in the room, or the people who just might be taller or physically have a louder voice, like that they're the ones that only get recognized. That's not fair. That's not equitable. So
yeah.
Recognizing excellence. That is definitely something that I think should be on every leader's mind and every person who is part of making decisions about how organizations are run. That's just a wonderful point, the recognition of excellence. And so with that point, I think that's a great time to wrap up this conversation, Randall. It's really been great chatting with you. Thank you for being such a wonderful conversation partner.
Yeah, likewise. This was great. Thanks for letting me rant.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Like I said, there's so many distinctions. I love the depth that we were able to get into in a number of different topics. So if people want to find you online, or if people want to connect with you, what might be the best way for them to do that?
I'm fairly active on Twitter. If you want to see my many attempts to be funny and the times when I actually succeed, I'm on Twitter at RKOUTNIK. So that's R Koutnik.
Wonderful.
And that's you really where I am online.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing that, Randall. Well, we will wrap up then. Thank you so much again for a great conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. Thanks.